Good afternoon, everybody. I think we should roll the tape to the tape people. My name is Mark Schwain, not Mark Twain, though I did grow up in Hannibal, Missouri. I'm from Valparaiso, Indiana, where I teach in Christ College, which is the Honors College at Valparaiso University. And here in the village as a board spouse, that's not a pun, as the husband of Dorothy Bass, who's on the Holden Board of Directors, and have been before on the summer teaching staff. And one year, several years ago, when I was in the summer teaching staff, I brought with me the little film, which I'm going to show, and will be the subject of our conversation for this afternoon, just in case some folks at the village might be interested in seeing it. And it turns out that people came and came again. I did it a couple of times. And at the end of my stint as a summer teacher, people couldn't remember at all what I had taught, but they all remembered that particular film. So when I arrived on the boat a few days ago, the summer teaching staff coordinator for this summer, Chris Sharon, asked if I could do just one session while I was here, and I agreed to do that. And I thought at first I would do a session on the novel by Ian McEwan called Atonement, thinking some people may have seen that film or read that book, because I love that novel. I think it's the best movie that's been written in the last 10 years. And you can do me a big favor, by the way, if you go to the bookstore, if you're interested in reading a novel, if you inquire about that novel or buy a copy, because I saw the bookstore coordinator and before I changed my mind about what to do today. And she said, oh good, when you mention Atonement, a lot of people want to buy it, so I'll order some extra copies. So I'll be in big trouble now that I've changed my mind, because I found that the film, The Lunch Date, was in the village, and decided I would do that instead. So the next time you're in the bookstore, at least ask about Atonement, even if you don't. Even if you don't buy a copy. Okay, so the way we're going to work, I generally like to have lots of time for discussion, and so I'm going to throw out this text, which is in the form of this film. I'll say just a few things about it. It only lasts 10 minutes. It's got a lot in it, I think you'll agree, and I see some of you here are back after a couple of years, having seen it here before, but you always see it fresh. And I'll tell you that I think the film is about hospitality. I think that's its central concern, which is a central concern of Christians and a central concern of Holden Village. It opens up a lot of very interesting questions about hospitality. And as you watch it, I think really the one question I want you to think about is this centrally involves a moment of two folks sharing a meal. And I want you to kind of think as you meet these two folks and watch them share this meal, and watch them afterwards, whether sharing that meal had any effect on one or both of them. Whether one or both of them seem to have been in any significant way changed or altered as the result of sharing that meal. And that'll be our sort of way into a broader conversation about hospitality. So that'll be my first question when we see in the film. Then we'll talk about it. I'll kind of moderate a conversation for about a half an hour, 40 minutes. And then you'll all, having had that conversation, want to see it again. So we'll close by watching the film called The Lunch Date a second time. It won in the year that it was released the Academy Award for the Best Short Subject. So it's received quite a lot of acclaim. And without further ado then, if someone could help me by shutting that door. And somebody back there can help me by cutting the lights.
No. You're making me miss my train.
Thank you.
we have the lights back there? Thank you. Okay, I think you can see that it's a very rich film, and I said I'd ask you to think about whether you think sharing that meal had any kind of effect on one or both of those folks who were sharing the meal. Would you prefer that we close the door, the lights in your eyes? She'd prefer that you close the door just because the light shining right in her eyes. So what do you think? Did the sharing of the meal make any difference to one or both of them?
To both of them.
To both of them. Can you say a little bit about in what way do you think they were affected or changed?
Well, I thought it was delightful when she decided to eat something off the plate and got her fork out and he looked at her. It never occurred to her that it wasn't her salad.
And how many people in here did it occur that it wasn't her salad? I mean, how many people realized all along that this was actually his salad? How many people thought it was his salad all along? About a minority thought it was his all along.
Yeah.
Okay. So the majority then were taken in as she was, kind of. That, in a sense, she thought it was her salad. And I gather most of you who didn't raise your hand thought also that it was. Which I think the film is very much designed to make us wonder, which we'll get into later, how much our own assumptions about whose salad it was were shaped by our biographies and perspectives and so on. But again, we're wondering about to what extent and in what ways were one or both of these folks changed by the meal? Yes.
I know it's my prejudice, but I thought the guy in the New York Union Station just ripped her off, so to speak, and she had every right to take it back. And in a sense, as it went along, she finally realized that she had made a terrible mistake, but also found that she could have some laughter in the mistake that she had made, and sort of reward herself for being bold enough to take her part of her salad, being his salad, of course. And that she was a bit delighted at his generosity to buy her coffee. Enjoy your meal, ma'am. With him, I think that he had the feeling that maybe she doesn't know what she's doing, but I can be kind to her and let the Christian heart
and
prevail.
Okay. So there's an account that both of these people in some ways were shaped in very interesting ways by this meal. I think that the suggestion here is that she came gradually to see not only the error of her ways, her own assumptions, which she comes to see in that moment at the end, after we do. It's interesting the way the camera is arranged and the point of view being one that's roughly like the fellow serving the meals, a sort of working class guy who's witnessing this. And we sort of see the situation just before she does. But in any event, you're suggesting that she comes to laugh at herself, she comes to learn some stuff, she comes even to be, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that some of her assumptions are challenged as a result of this, and so she's on the way to possibly some kind of larger transformation, right? And that he basically finds himself becoming generous when he sees the desperation of her hunger. Back there?
He mentioned the word hospitality. He surely was the hospitable one of the two.
The remark was that he was the hospitable one of the two. And that if we want to ask who showed hospitality, it was certainly him, even though, of course, the irony is that she thinks she's the host all along, whereas she's actually, she finds the guest. Go ahead.
When you were talking about that the clerk or the cook, that it was through his viewpoint or sight of vision, I was intrigued by the mirrors that we see the bag at the end, and that they, it wasn't one complete mirror, there was the lines or the cracks in it, which I'm wondering, I wonder if anyone else thinks about seeing the bags first through the mirror versus seeing it the other way.
Mm-hmm. The role of the mirrors.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll come back to that, yes.
I guess I would argue that there is very incomplete transformation in that she laughs at herself, and there's a bit of a transformation from fear to her emboldened, you know, response, and then realizing her own mistake. But yet she walks to the train still very much in her own world. I was struck by two, and in a short, you know, extraneous lines I think are really important. And when she's walking to the lunch date, there's the song, and it's a blues song where it's Lord have mercy. She experiences mercy and grace and laughs at herself. And yet when she passes through the station again, the extraneous line in the background is Lord, I'm starving. And I was expecting her to then be transformed and drop something in the cup or whatever, and the filmmaker did not show that. Mm-hmm. And so to me, there was, even in the whimsical nature of it, there was some sadness and some incomplete transformation. And even the host, I thought, and this is the first time I've seen it, I'd have to watch it again here, I can't remember it, but I'm thinking in my memory that he was sad, you know, and that there was this sort of ennui, you know, so there's this, in the midst of whimsy, there was also grief.
Okay, so we have another account here that if there was a transformation in her, it was slight or brief or both, okay? So that it didn't amount to quite as much as we thought, some thought earlier. And if whatever it was didn't last very long, so it was, as I say, slight or brief or both on this reckoning, based on how she behaves once she leaves the lunch date. Yes?
I kind of agree with Simon. I think that when she ended up leaving her own salad on the table, it seemed as though she did it not out of generosity, meaning, you know, somebody fed me, so now I'm going to leave it for somebody else. I had more of a feeling that she left it because she was in a hurry.
Yes?
I think that she had a huge need. I think he had a huge need. And they were not completely transformed, but they would never be the same again.
Mm-hmm. Say a little bit about what his need was.
My feeling was that he needed to be, he had a need to give and be hospitable, okay, even though he had very little, it appeared.
Way in the back row and then just in front.
I was intrigued by the fact that the camera panned on the back of his head two or three times that showed the tag still on his hat, and he stolen that, lifted it, new hat. Why did the camera focus on that tag on the back of his head? Did he need to redeem himself?
What would be your reading? The suggestion is that he stole the hat, and
yes,
that's the reason,
yes,
the camera,
yes,
pans onto the tag. Yes.
The camera panned on several, I'll call them street people, homeless people, maybe. My reaction was that this man was probably a homeless person, street person. And I know from working at a community meal place, they really like to come to have, some of them like to come just for the community that they get for that hour. And I was thinking, gee, you sort of start to appreciate that community of somebody sitting down and sharing with him. When that person got up and left, he felt really sad that it lasted such a short time.
So you agree that with the remark earlier that he had a need, and you would describe a need as a need for community or friendship, and that he feels a bit of that communion there during the meal, and that his sorrow is that it's so quickly broken as she rises to leave.
And unlike what we might think, some of those people are very willing to share, and he'd be very willing to share if he could just receive some communities.
Yes?
I wonder, when she said, "That's my salad," and he just kind of grunted, why didn't you just say, "Your salad's over there. This is mine," you know? He didn't like, so.
There's no other verbal.
No communication, so it made them.
That's a good question. Does he know that,
You don't think he would have.
Does he know until what? Someone said, the salt and pepper?
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't seem, the argument that I guess you're making is that he doesn't know when she sits down, but then he does reach over. This is a very interesting directorial decision. He has to reach over to get the salt and pepper, and then obviously it may be that he takes the situation in at that point.
Yeah, and he didn't take her bags. They were sitting there. He left. Knew they were there.
Okay, let's see. I think you were first, and then we'll move this way, yes?
Somebody mentioned that she didn't put any money in the cup, but when she paid for her salad, she didn't even have enough for that. So either she was scamming the restaurant or.
I think her wallet does.
Okay, so the question was, did she have money to give at the end? And there's a recollection that he did shove back some money to her in that transaction.
He said it was $3 and she only paid like $1.52. He was just giving her on the spot bargain.
Yes?
She was obviously very upset at the beginning that she had lost a possession in the accident. But when she came back to sit down, she wasn't aware that her possessions were gone, that her bag was not sitting there. And I think that's rather strange. That something that had been so foremost in her mind, now all of a sudden is gone.
Why doesn't she, in other words, when she sits down in the booth, realize that there are, all of those possessions are not, are not present? Anybody have an idea why that might be?
I think she was so quick. I think she was so quick to assume that it was her salad, and she's white privileged. So, how, you know, that's got to be hers, and nothing else mattered at that moment because she just assumed that that is his character, that he would just do that, so it didn't matter. And then I just mentioned over here when she came back for her bags again, she assumed, and it goes right back to, she really wasn't all that transformed as deeply as we had hoped she would be, because she came back, and how I read it was that she assumed he took them, her bags, because she stopped and didn't look anywhere else for the longest time. Just stood there and said, "Of course, he took them." That's how I read her body language, but when I see it again, maybe I'll think differently.
And also, at the end, when she's leaning, is she relieved at the very end? It's all over? Is sort of tickled, but onto her world?
Or we'll have to be going home.
And he, yet, the gentleman that shared his salad was accepted.
Catherine?
The waiter could have stopped all this.
He's a he chooses to remain a spectator. And his character is also very interesting as to why he chooses to remain a spectator and exactly what his role is there and what's he doing in the film and so on. Yes, ma'am.
There's something deeper here that maybe I'm missing. In the 40s or whenever this was, a black woman would not be sitting with a black man would not be sitting with a white woman or vice versa. So there's something more to this that I'm not getting at.
Yes, sir.
I first thought that he was a homeless man, then I decided that he's a part of the working poor.
Yeah.
And I saw her a person with a higher class, but him not the lowest class. And being able to be very, very generous. And then the point of not sharing with her that your salad's next door. There was this kind of a push between them as they joined together rather angrily and then changed to just sort of sharing it and sort of enjoying it.
Okay, let's, your remarks about him being working poor rather than homeless, et cetera, and we've heard comments about did he steal the hat. And let's dwell on him for a bit. We've talked a good deal about her. What do we know for sure about this person? I mean, either in terms of his social class or his character and so on, yes?
Well, I'm not sure why we're assuming that he's homeless or he's poor. I mean, all that we know is that he bought a salad and had a pot with egg on it.
And he's black.
And that he's black.
Yes?
I don't know if this is fair because I've seen it before, but he appears earlier.
Yeah.
in the movie, in the, at the very beginning. She saw it for the first time, and she saw it's letters, anyway.
Yeah. No, he did. He brushed up against the ticket machine, and he scooped the money out. Oh, right. Change that was left over in the machine.
He's checking the, I think it's the telephone booths for extra change that's in there, and he's rolling around, and he's got a sack in his hand at that point. Yes.
You have to look at the reasoning behind the people most of all, though, because if there's someone that's in a lower stage of life, they do more observing than someone that's as high up as that lady was. So he saw the need for society, how people need to be more caring for each other, and that was his chance to do it. And that lady didn't find the need for it. And the fact was that you could tell that she was racist from that man did run into her. She told him not to touch his stuff. And then when she went there, she felt, this black man's eating my salad. I'm going to take my salad back from him. So the guy was finding his change. He was trying to make the world better. But at the same time, she was counteracting it with nothing because she didn't see anything going on except for people downtrodding on her.
Okay, so we're getting into his character now. The idea is that he's very discerning and perspicacious in a way that she isn't, being more blinded than he is by the whole circumstances of the class and situation that he finds himself in. Yes, Rosanna?
He seemed reluctantly hospitable. He wasn't willing to share his salad at first. So I was just curious about what changed in him when she started to eat off his plate.
Very nice, yes.
He was not interested at all at first in sharing his salad.
He thinks that she's quite daft. I mean, nuts. Now, I'm wondering, since you bring this up, and so well to be reminded of that, that there doesn't seem to be an initial willingness to be hospitable, the question then would become, do you think he changes because he takes in the situation? That is to say, when he reaches back to take the salt and realizes that she's been mistaken and so forth. I mean, does that have something to do with his change of heart?
And still, is it hospitality? I think he's almost more intrigued than hospitable.
Like he's realized she's not crazy. Because if someone had tried to eat my salad, I would think they were totally nuts, like you said. But then he's like, oh, she's not crazy, she's just wrong.
Yes.
He's like playing with her.
I suppose, the other side of that coin, if the reason he becomes hospitable is because he realizes what's going on, is that maybe he's enjoying messing with someone.
Yeah.
And like, it might not be hospitality. He might just be like, oh, this is fun. This is too funny.
Yeah,
this really white woman, like, things she knows by the way, not and I guess the other thing is that I think the important thing, like when she first wants to say it's my salad, he bangs on the table so violently. I mean, the thing that he refuses is for her to take what's his. I don't know that if he ever refuses, even before he knows what's going on, to share what's his, but he won't let her take it, which is different than being hospitable, I think. So if it is hospitality, there's those two kind of things.
Nice point. Yes?
The sadness in him at the end, though, indicates that there is an emotional investment beyond just a curiosity in the whole situation on his part, that he was hoping for something more on an emotional level than just to be an observer to this, you know, this silly episode with this lady.
You're going to notice when you see it again that though it's only a small interval, and though very few words are spoken, the softening of the facial expressions and so forth as these two people gradually come to oddly know each other. I mean, in other words, from her stabbing, she moves to very delicate gestures of eating the pieces of lettuce, you'll see. I mean, there's a kind of decorum and decorous quality to the way she behaves as compared to this animal-like and barbaric quality at the beginning. And that happens just through a few differences in the way she holds her hands, in the way she looks at him, etc. And the director signals this by having, for the first time in a long time, this music enter when he brings her the coffee. So you're kind of alerted musically as well as the bringing of the coffee, that now they've reached a different stage of their relationship than they had at the beginning. Yes.
Well, the other thing that kind of struck me the second time I see this movie now is just the whole lack of hospitality in the whole, the movie was so beautiful. I mean, we have Grand Central Station, and she's got furs on, she's got a fur hat, a fur coat. She's kind of scatterbrained, but she's on her way to Connecticut or someplace. And so she's in a kind of a hostile environment there. But so are these panhandlers. And the one guy who's right in front of her face there, before she goes into the diner, is pretty threatening. And so it's a threatening environment for her, it's a threatening environment for him, and you don't feel like she's really safe until she gets on this train, walks in the train, and there's a sense of relief that she demonstrates that the whole movie was so beautifully done, the whole thing was hostile.
Good.
Yes.
But she seems to harden just a little bit when she leaves. I mean, that wasn't a thank you or anything of the sort, and you can all see the hardening of the face. I've got to go back out into that.
Very nice. I mean, in other words, when she's caught back up in time and has to get that train and so forth, she kind of seems to lose track of the bonding that has taken place. Mm-hmm. Yes?
The guy that threatened her, the panhandler, he's threatening us too because he looks right at us into the camera, mm-hmm. which is a very odd kind of directorial thing. I also think it's interesting the juxtaposition, the very well-dressed African-American man, probably the one that might have picked up her wallet or whatever it was, and yet it's this other man who we're thinking isn't wealthy, is the one who offered her the coffee.
I got the feeling she lost her wallet because she wouldn't let anything help her, you know? She didn't give him time to help her, and she was gone. I don't necessarily think that he picked it up, but it got lost.
Yeah.
He offered his help, and she didn't take it.
Before calling, let me just say in response to Janet, when you see the movie again, it's worth that man that she says looks directly at us and is addressing us. Now, what he says are two things, Lord have mercy, which we've already been reminded of, and then I know who you are. So, and he's given a special authority because he's the only character in the film who generates music on his own. The rest of the music is extra diegetic, that is to say, it's supplied by some background orchestra, et cetera, who's playing music and we hear it. But we don't see anybody making music except him on the harmonica. So the fact that he has that and the fact that he stares right at the camera, as Janet said, fills the screen and has those two curious forms of dress, I know who you are, that kind of, I think, is, Janet's quite right. He's looking at us and he's addressing us, not just the people in his immediate vicinity. So you might want to pay close attention to him again. Okay, now we sort of took a little detour from talking about this man. We talked about him being perspicacious and incisive and discerning. I think people were reminded that we'd seen him earlier, and maybe we think he is more of a homeless person, perhaps a thief. Is he completely human, that is to say, specifically, how does he get there to that booth?
Yeah.
How does he get there? I mean, when you think about now getting back to mirrors and how the thing is set up and so forth and how the booths are related and positioned, is it humanly possible for him to have gotten there through the ordinary ambulatory ways that people would, given the way the whole choreography of the scene is set up? I mean, that's just something you might want to look at and pay attention to when you see it again. After all, her booth is further down the line, and she goes up to get her silverware and wipe it off, right? And now when he comes, she's very cleanly. That's another thing you would say about her, very specific, brushing things off, not wanting to contaminate herself. So watch what she does with touch later on when she actually accepts, for example, the sugar that he offers and so forth and says thank you and no thank you. But be that as it may, it might be fun when you see it again to kind of wonder, how does he get to that particular position? Yes?
I was particularly struck with the fact that he wiped his mouth after he was eating as well. So they set this up as is that she has manners and he would not. that clearly, and then we subsequently see him bring her the coffee. But just this very genteel effort that he made, which really challenged, I think, her brusqueness and her. So what it seemed was not what it seemed to be. So
I just think that moment of the coffee bringing, I don't know about all the other details,
of the cinematography and everything. It was just a moment of pure grace, and it just changed something inside of me when I was watching it. Mm-hmm. And I actually went, oh. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed like grace to me.
Very nice. I mean, I think that if there is a moment of grace at that moment, and that's when the music comes in, and that's when, I mean, if the appropriate response to grace is gratitude, that's just when you get the dialogue then immediately following where they speak and the words are, no thank you, thank you. So that there's kind of grace and gratitude moment there. Not to speak of the very spare dialogue and how often not only do we have Lord have mercy, but when she sees what's happened, it's oh my God. And when one of the earlier is oh my Lord. So you get a lot of exclamations interestingly placed in this film of that kind of invocation. So the film is filled with a kind of sacramental resonance. Yes.
I'm kind of wondering more about twist and how a lot of us, as we raise our hands, a lot of us were thinking that it wasn't the man's dish. And so I'm wondering if we can think about what the director was intending with the twist. Are we supposed to feel shame that we thought he was somebody that had stolen her food, or what was intended with that? Because I feel like he sets it up so that we do see him as this person who's stolen the plate, because there's all these there's I don't know, all these images of these homeless people around, and I wonder what the director intended there.
Okay, everybody understand the question? It's a very good question, it seems to me. Insofar as the film seems designed, and it really does, to have us basically share her point of view, right, with respect to that meal and whose it is, okay? What are we being taught or shown, or what's he up to there in setting things up in that way? Even if we didn't fall for it, I think most of us were taken in by it, but what's the point of that? Yes, okay. Back there.
Well, I don't have a complete answer to this question, but what I think is important about us possibly assuming the same thing the woman assumes is that we will be almost as confused as she is when she brings the coffee. Like, that seems like a really, really crucial moment. That should be just perplexing, and clearly she would have to be perplexed by the person who stole the meal bringing her coffee. And I think that we are supposed to be similarly perplexed, and that then things kind of unravel from there, assumptions unravel.
Yes.
Additionally, I know Janet said that the man that runs into her addresses us as the audience. I don't remember what the line is, but I think we're supposed to be put in her shoes, not only to assume the same thing she does about the man who she's lunch with, but maybe we're supposed to continue. As someone said that her transformation is incomplete, maybe we are supposed to, as the audience, complete her transformation and pass on that grace. That might have been the intention of the director.
Very interesting, yes.
I piggyback on that. I agree absolutely with that. And I think that's where that line, I know who you are, is echoing. And it almost could be a, you know, said of the viewer. Do I know who I am when I see this? And what does that moment of grace do to me? Am I totally transformed, or am I just confused or relieved or whatever? You know, and if we're attentive to our own self and reflecting on this, maybe we will know who we are in response to that moment of grace.
Very nice. Yes.
Well, kind of back to the point of, you know, why did the man, you know, do what he did, and why was he kind of just showing grace to the person, and why he felt so bad when she left. And I thought, you know, well, maybe he was trying to, you know, just open things up and, you know, try to open up the community and open up his life to other people he didn't really know. And maybe he was really just thinking that the spirit was really in the moment and the spirit was guiding him to, you know, when he looked back and got the pepper or salt or whatever it was, and he saw her bags, maybe the spirit was telling him, you know, that this could be a really good thing and, you know, maybe you should just go along.
Very nice. Yes. Very nice. Yes, sir.
Well, perhaps the director is trying to tell us that there are many faces of God, and that because of our fears and prejudices, we don't see it.
And there would certainly be a lot of warrant in this film in terms of what's said when and so forth. I think that's exactly what's going on in this case. Yes, way back.
Have you shown this movie to people like the gentleman?
Yes.
And how was the response then?
Well, it's interesting. We show it, I show it, my college has always a special event for Martin Luther King Day. The whole university shuts down and we invite in the larger community for teach-ins on MLK Day. And each academic unit has to put up a session. So we put up this, and we have a lot of folks coming in from Gary and whatnot who share and watch this, and it's a tremendous conversation. One of the many ironies is that the folks from Gary who are African-American are much more convinced that this guy, A, stole the hat, that the first guy ripped off the woman, and so forth, than the white middle-class students who think, well, I don't know if that's right, that they would. But they are very much more sort of street smart and so forth and think that, you know, there's no question that that's what's happened to this woman. So they tend, oddly, to sympathize more with the woman. Okay, and her plight and her tears suddenly being bereft of, not only did she miss her train, but she probably doesn't have money, and she feels in this menacing environment, and they think, well, she should feel menaced in this environment. So that's, I think, the main difference that you sort of get, and that's why it's such an interesting film to see with folks who are themselves very diverse, because they bring very different perspectives to the film. That's the most, I think, noticeable pattern I've noticed over the years when we've shown it in that context. Yes.
Did you think, though, that gentleman, the film is old.
Yes.
So that the man didn't really feel that he could get upset with the lady because she's a white, middle class, he's
possibility.
Black, downtrodden, and probably he was afraid to create a scene. So it wasn't that he was being hospitable, he was just afraid, too.
Okay, I think that if we're going to get at 5:15, I think is when is that right? It lasts an hour of the session.
Yeah.
So if we're going to adjourn on time, which I like to do, we have time for one more showing. Test all of the hypotheses that we've thrown out, including your own, and look for some of the details that came up when we were talking. So if we could have the lights.